got a sprain or an itch.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
We, the people of the United States, and especially those citizens who have been treated for chronic, unrelenting pain, have suffered during these past several months of the COVID pandemic that has not yet even abated. Many precautions are being taken by individuals, businesses, and government that curtail, hinder, and in other ways affect our normal daily lives.
Many of you, your relatives, and friends who do suffer from chronic pain have found that a lot of normal treatments that have been extensively used have been either limited or even missing during the time of the pandemic.
And many have remained that way to this day. And, well, no end appears to be in sight for the majority.
Apart from the inability to go for outside treatments such as gyms, physical and massage therapy, acupuncture, and even injections, many have found it difficult and occasionally impossible to obtain the normal medications that are being prescribed to them in order to limit their pain.
So today, we are first going to discuss the perils that chronic pain patients are going through in this time of fear, and later we'll hone in on treatments and causes of low back pain, the most common pain in adults in the United States. So let's get started.
First of all, studies have actually shown that chronic pain patients may be more susceptible to COVID-19, and if infected with the virus, they may face different consequences than others.
Sam Naruse, a physician and PhD from Western Reserve Hospital in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, said that chronic pain patients can be considered immunocompromised, mainly because so many are elderly and have multiple comorbidities. Now, he also noted that many also are on long-term opioid therapy, which also seems to interact with the immune system. Not only that, some are on steroids, which also may induce immunosuppression.
There is another issue. It is important to prevent emergency room visits during the COVID crisis. We all wish to keep the patient safe at home and minimize face-to-face interactions.
We all know that COVID can present with extensive muscle aches and pains. This can aggravate various pain syndromes, particularly those involved in muscle and bone. So if a patient has chronic back, neck, or orofacial pain, excessive coughing may actually worsen it. Patients who take opioids for pain are at an elevated risk of sedation, and this on top of the lung problems caused by the COVID virus increase the patient's respiratory depression, and this can even increase mortality.
Patients with chronic pain often take other medications that also increase their respiratory depression, such as the muscle relaxant like Flexeril and antidepressants.
There are other added risks for chronic pain patients, especially for those whose medication is given by a transdermal patch. One of the symptoms of the viral infection is fever. This means that there's an elevated body temperature, and this can increase the absorption of the medicine through the skin.
The Drug Enforcement Administration has waived federal requirements for in-person visits before prescribing controlled substances and has issued prescribing guidelines during the COVID-19 public health emergency period.
Many chronic pain patients may be on oral steroids or may have even received a recent steroid injection, which could conceivably cause an altered immune response. And studies have shown that steroids are associated with a higher risk of influenza.
One big problem for many chronic pain patients is that during the pandemic and social distancing, many patients may not be able to attend regular physical therapy sessions to help manage pain.
There's a group called the Global Healthy Living Foundation and Creaky Joints. Great name. You can find them on the internet at creakyjoints.org. Now, they've developed a study called the Autoimmune COVID-19 Project.
One of the authors of the study, Chilpa Venkata Chalam, Associate Director of Research at Creaky Joints and Co-Principal Investigator of Arthritis Power, along with Dr. Michael George, Assistant Professor of Medicine and Epidemiology at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania at Philadelphia, were interviewed recently.
The aim of the study was to understand the experiences, beliefs, and concerns of patients with respiratory illness symptoms, COVID-19 testing, modified doctor visits using telehealth, the choices they make about immunosuppressive treatments, and their preferred sources of information about COVID-19. So it encompassed a lot of relative things that concerned all patients with chronic pain in a time of pandemic and social distancing.
Parts of the questionnaires given to the study subjects were to be used by the researchers as a guide to clinical care, policy making, quality of life improvements, better therapeutic interventions, and increased patient satisfaction.
So I fast-forwarded to the part of the long article that dealt with the results so far of the study. Well, they enrolled more than 20,000 patients with arthritis and rheumatic disease in the United States and Canada.
14% of patients in the study showed respiratory illness symptoms. 3% got tested for COVID-19. 1% were diagnosed with COVID-19, and 29% accessed telehealth services.
But in the meantime, and until the research comes up with more concrete results over time, we can all look at that website. Again, that's creakyjoints.org. And you can get a copy of their Rheumatology Patient's Guide to Optimal Care. Apart from the five golden rules that pretty much everyone should follow during the time of this pandemic, there are suggestions for those with chronic pain.
As you probably all know, the five golden rules are follow social distancing, hand washing, and hygiene practices. If you're healthy, remain on your current medications, never stop change a medication without talking to your physicians, and try to stay in touch with your doctor and keep your appointments either in person or using telehealth contact.
Other parts of the golden rules include taking care of the physical and mental health with stress management, healthy eating, physical activity, and sufficient healthy sleep.
Other suggestions by Creaky Joints are not to fear in-person testing and treatment. Be open to telehealth visits for routine care. Follow your medication regimen as directed by your doctor. Tell your doctor about flares or new symptoms and track your periods of pain, fatigue, and other symptoms.
Also, this is important. Keep adequate supplies of your medications.
One of the most common causes of chronic pain in adults is low back pain. It is not one disease, but rather a group of maladies that include herniated discs, facet joint dysfunction, spinal stenosis, sacroiliac joint dysfunction, and compression fractures.
If you don't know what any of these terms mean, don't worry. Before we get to the treatments of chronic back pain, we'll explain the causes in a little bit more detail so that you know exactly what we're talking about. Other causes include spondylolisthesis, spinal cord tumors, osteoarthritis, as well as trauma and spinal irregularities. Now, there are also other less frequent causes such as osteomyelitis and even some autoimmune diseases like fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, and lupus that can cause unrelenting back pain.
We may not think of spine as being a joint or even a group of joints, but the vertebrae are able to move because of the joint configuration of the vertebrae, one on top of the other.
The facet joints are joints that are located behind most of the spinal discs. They help give the spine its flexibility, and they also help stabilize it as well. When these joints become inflamed, they can cause pain similar to that of a herniated disc. Then there's spinal stenosis, which is just a narrowing of the spinal canal where the spinal cord and the nerves live. When this narrows, it can put pressure on the nerves, and this causes pain. And just like disc herniations, these are the most common in the cervical and lumbar portions of the spine. That's the top and bottom.
Once we get down to the hip region, where the spine joins the pelvis, you may find sacroiliac joint dysfunction. The sacroiliac joint connects to the bottom of the spine, that's the sacrum, to the pelvic bone.
They are normally strong, weight-bearing, low-motion joints that act as shock absorbers between the upper and the lower body. If these joints become swollen, then pain can ensue. They can also be damaged in the joints where there is little or too much motion in the joints themselves.
Another cause of chronic low back pain is something called a compression fracture, which is the result of smaller fractures in the vertebra that collapse.
These fractures are usually due to the bones becoming weak and soft due to several causes such as natural wear and tear over time, osteoporosis, or even other issues such as cancer, including lymphoma and multiple myeloma. And of course, trauma can cause these as well. A term very familiar to pain management physicians is spondylolisthesis. It's a big word that simply means one vertebra slips over the other, either forwards or backwards. This creates an unstable spine and pain results, or the pain can be due to nerve compression.
It is commonly known as a slip disc. All the other terms are pretty much self-explanatory, so we won't waste any more time on this and concentrate on the treatments that are presently available to eliminate or lessen the pain in the low back.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center.
I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 33 years.
We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. We're not going to talk at length about the medications that have been used in the treatment of chronic pain, as we've gone over those multiple times on this show. They include NSAIDs, that's the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen, aspirin, and diclofenac, to name just a few. There are also muscle relaxants, opioids, as well as antidepressants that have been used and are still used in the treatment of chronic pain.
Many of you listening who have gone through treatment for chronic pain may have been given or offered various types of injections such as trigger point and epidural injections. But these have a certain amount of risks and are not always successful.
Also, your physician may offer steroid injections if your symptoms include pain radiating down your leg, and this may consist of an anti-inflammatory, such as cortisone, that is a numbing medication that can be injected into the space around your spinal cord, and that's called the epidural space. This works by decreasing inflammation around the nerve roots. This relief has been known to last several months, but unfortunately, many patients say that it was not that successful or lasted a much briefer period of time, sometimes just for a few days or hours.
There is also physical therapy, massage therapy, as well as occupational therapy, along with acupuncture, mindfulness training, and a host of other axillary treatments that may have worked for some but not all patients with chronic pain.
Well, so now we get to surgery. This is usually not a first choice for chronic pain, but if the pain is unrelenting, and especially if the pain is associated with radiating leg pain or progressive muscle weakness caused by nerve compression, you might just consider surgery.
Surgery is usually only for those whose pain is due to spinal stenosis, herniated disc, or caused by trauma to the spine that is amenable to a surgical procedure.
The NIH's National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke has listed several of the surgical options available for low back pain. But interestingly, the National Institute also cautions that there is little evidence to show which procedures work best for their particular indications. We're going to discuss them in alphabetical order. So first, there is artificial disc replacement. Carmen's going to tell us a little bit about that.
Artificial disc replacement, which is considered an alternative to spinal fusion for the treatment of people with severely damaged discs. The procedure involves removal of the disc and its replacement by a synthetic disc that helps restore height and movement between the vertebrae.
Then down our list we have discectomy, which is used to remove a disc when it has herniated and presses on a nerve root or the spinal cord. The laminectomy and the discectomy are very frequently performed together.
Now we have foraminotomy. In this procedure, the surgeon enlarges the bony hole where a nerve root exits the spinal canal to prevent bulging discs or joints thickened with age from pressing on the nerve.
We also have the nucleoplasty, which has another name, and that's plasma disc decompression. This is a laser surgery which uses radio frequency energy to treat people with low back pain associated with a mildly herniated disc.
In this surgical procedure, the surgeon inserts a needle into the disc. Then a plasma laser device is inserted into the needle and the tip is heated, creating a field that vaporizes the tissue in the disc.
Hopefully this reduces the size of the obstruction and relieves pressure on the nerves. We briefly mentioned the spinal laminectomy when we talked about it being done along with a discectomy. There's also the spinal decompression. Now, this is performed when spinal stenosis causes a narrowing of the spinal canal that results in pain, numbness, and often weakness. The surgeon, well, what the surgeon does is he or she removes the bony walls of the vertebrae and any bone spurs. The idea is, again, to open up the spinal column to remove pressure on the nerves.
In a spinal fusion, the surgeon removes the spinal disc between two or more vertebrae, then fuses the adjacent vertebrae using bone grafts or metal devices secured by screws.
Now, spinal fusion may result in some loss of flexibility in the spine. It also often requires a long recovery period to allow the bone grafts to grow and fuse the vertebrae together. The more vertebrae that are fused, the more that the flexibility is lost.
And finally, in this list, we have vertebroplasty and kyphoplasty, two terms which may be confusing. These procedures are used to repair compression fractures of the vertebrae caused by osteoporosis.
Both procedures include the injection of a glue-like bone cement that hardens and strengthens the bone. Some surgical treatments are not recommended by the NINDS, which cautions, for example, that intradiscal electrothermal therapy is of, and I'm quoting them here, questionable benefit. The NINDS also notes that radiofrequency denervation provides only temporary pain relief, and that evidence supporting this technique is generally limited. There is a relatively new procedure known as intradiscal thermal annuloplasty, which we'll refer to as IDTA. It seems to be effective in treating some forms of back pain.
One likely source of pain is the fibrous discs separating the spinal vertebrae, and one possible cause of persistent back pain is degeneration of the disc's central pulp.
If that is the problem, then IDTA could be helpful, at least according to research published in the very well-respected journal Spine. In one study, more than 50 patients with back pain due to internal disc disruption were offered the treatment. In 17 cases, their insurance companies simply refused to pay. So this group received physical rehabilitation and pain relief medications instead. The researchers compared the 35 who received the IDTA treatment with the others who didn't. They found that 23 of the patients who received the procedure experienced a significant decrease in pain compared with only one in the other group. 12 months later, these patients still felt significantly better. About two-thirds of those who had the procedure experienced some benefit. Nearly one-quarter obtained complete relief of pain.
This procedure is not for everyone. For example, it is not suitable if there is an extruded or displaced disc pressing on a nerve, or when this height has decreased.
And the doctor must be experienced in this type of procedure to get really good results. Now, the procedure itself takes only about an hour under local anesthesia. Patients should not expect immediate improvement. For the first 2 weeks after the procedure, the pain may even be worse because the disc needs time to heal. But over the next several months, the pain should gradually lessen.
We can talk specifically about the Intracept procedure, which is, again, a minimally invasive procedure that targets the basic vertebral nerve for the relief of chronic vertebrogenic low back pain.
This nerve, the basivertebral nerve, is located within the bony structure of the vertebrae. The procedure is a treatment option for patients who have not responded to conservative therapy. Now, there's nothing implanted, and the structure of the spine is maintained.
This treatment that we mentioned before, the Intracept intraosseous nerve ablation system, is intended to be used along with radiofrequency generators for the ablation, meaning removal of the basivertebral nerves of the lower lumbar vertebrae, L3 through S1, to give the patients relief of chronic low back pain of at least 6 months duration.
It's only recommended for those patients with chronic low back pain who have not responded to the normal conservative treatments, who also demonstrate changes on an MRI such as inflammation, edema, vertebral end plate changes, disruption and fissuring of the end plates, vascularized fibrous tissue within the adjacent marrow, and some other vertebral changes.
There are patients, however, who cannot have this procedure, and that includes those with severe cardiac or pulmonary compromise, or in patients with an active systemic infection or local infection in the area to be treated.
Also, it's contraindicated in pregnant women and those under the age of 18. You also cannot have an implantable pulse generator, such as a pacemaker, defibrillator, or many other electronic implants.
It's another treatment for chronic low back pain that goes by the name of the graft procedure.
Remember when we talked about the pedicles, which are part of the vertebral ring that surrounds the spinal cord? Well, pedicle screw-based dynamic stabilization was introduced as an alternative to fusions with the intent of decreasing poor outcomes and failure of other surgical procedures.
Biomechanical studies have validated dynamic stabilization with what is called graft ligamentoplasty and the Dynesis system, which uses flexible materials to stabilize the affected lumbar region while preserving the natural anatomy of the spine.
It appears to be unique since it is designed to stabilize the spine without fusing it. It allows some motion in the spine and is implanted through a familiar surgical approach. It's estimated that nearly 400,000 people in the U.S. undergo fusion procedures each year. That's averaging over 1,000 back fusions a day.
The intent of the Dynesis system is to provide spine surgeons with an alternative to the rigid fixation provided by today's systems.
Now, I've watched several surgical procedures where the Dynesis system was surgically implanted in patients. What makes this different than most previous surgical procedures where there is fusion of the vertebrae, screws are drilled into the vertebrae posteriorly through the back of the patient. Once this is done, then, and here's the change, flexible washers are placed between the screws of the various vertebrae, allowing the patient to bend to some degree while still keeping the appropriate space between the bony vertebrae from compressing the spinal nerves.
There have been several other systems similar to the Dynesis system made by various companies using somewhat similar procedures. These are certainly not innocuous procedures and must be performed by experienced spinal surgeons.
Well, we have to keep in mind that as our population ages, there'll be a need for an increase in spinal procedures. In the year 2017, about 16% of the American population was 65 years old or over. That's expected to reach 22% by the year 2050. Compare this to the increase from 1950, when only 8% of the population was 65 or over. Because older patients are more likely to have suboptimal bone quality, they may actually require stronger forms of fixation. For example, 95% of the surgeons have reported to have seen a lateral mass screw pull out or loosen.
One of the main successes has been use of image guidance, which is fast becoming increasingly widespread. This obviously helps improve the success of most procedures.
One of the big problems in performing minimally invasive spine surgery is that it can result in a decrease in visualization as the procedure proceeds. However, the smaller the incision and the better the procedure is visualized by a surgeon, the better the ultimate success of that surgery. Now, this made me think of a procedure I was doing on a toy for my grandson one time. I had to remove several screws in order to take the toy apart to repair it. The first screw was simple. I could see it. The screw was uninhibited and could easily be removed, and I put it back the same way. However, two of the screws were deep inside a very narrow, deep hole. Even though I knew the type of screw head and had the appropriate screwdriver, it was still a chore getting the screw out without damaging the toy or the screw while doing it all, basically blind. In other words, I could not see the screw as I attempted to remove and later replace it.
We have only talked about the number of persons in the U.S. that have chronic low back pain. But for a moment, let us look at the number of persons worldwide that are diagnosed with low back pain.
Annually, 266 million patients worldwide are diagnosed with low back pain due to lumbar degenerative disease.
Minimally invasive surgery for spinal fusion is growing for the treatment of lumbar degenerative disease due to lower mobility, meaning less blood loss, surgical complications, wound infections, and decreased hospital length of stay.
This also means lowered total hospital direct costs compared to open surgical procedures. In conclusion, therapies and procedures that reduce time and costs and provide optimized outcomes are expected to increase as innovative technologies continue to shape the space. Thinking of investing in companies with the possibility of long-term profits? Then look no further than companies that are presently doing the studies on these spinal procedures.
Here comes the doctor. He comes to see me. Here comes the doctor. He comes to heal me. I am here to tell him all about my story. Here I'm here to tell him all about my pain.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.